Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Remember, Sunbury Motors, the service department, outstanding. They will take really good care of you, be very fair, and take care of only what you need. That is the service department at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, Bob Nightingale, USA Today, in just a few moments. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Yeah, the Cubs actually win.
Not before. Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10!
Unreal. The Cubs, and that was the one with, was that the one where Chapman threw 42 pitches and all 42 were fastballs?
Yes, that something was. Like that was one of the best World Series I've ever seen. That was just a classic. Good game Cleveland seven, played, good series, yeah.
Cleveland played great. Before we get to Bob Nightingale, the NCAA tournament, I told you that they had taken out they had an insurance policy on the tournament, but I also told you last week that, the insurance policy doesn't quite meet the dollar figure they'd receive. I think I said it was $250 million. It turned out it was $270 million. The NCAA also dipped $50 million into its account reserves. And the distribution figure will be, instead of $600 million, it is going to be $225 million that will be dispersed among all 32 conferences. $53.6 million of the $225 million will be split equally among 32 conferences. The other $172 million will be split based on factors the NCAA did not reveal publicly. In other words, the idea that the ACC and the Big Ten are going to get more than the Southland Conference or the Patriot League. That's probably what it means. Jim Schaus, the Southern Conference commissioner, said that they were expecting to get $1.6 million in a normal year. And, of course, there were no units handed out this year. The units are paid out based on a rolling six-year period. So this will also mean lower gains in years ahead, all right? So just thought we'd pass that along to you because we did talk about it last week. All right, let's bring in Bob Nightingale, USA Today, on what is supposed to be the opening day of Major League Baseball season. And of course, it is not. It'll be down the road, and maybe in early June. Bob, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is supposed to be opening day for Major League Baseball. Obviously, it's not. So how close are they? You know, I'm sure there are various scenarios on the board, but how close are they to brokering a deal with the players where they can get some semblance of a start going?
Yeah, I mean, not so much the start, but just, you know, service time, pay, that sort of thing. It should be done in the next 24 hours. So players will still get, you know, your service time and, you know, in return. Probably just prorate the pay. I think they'll get some money up front to help them get through this. Where, you know, at least some of the star players are, you know, at least making the minimum type salary. But the service time issue, you know, which would mean that if there's no season, a guy like Mookie Betts could be a free agent without even playing a day for the Dodgers.
And also a guy like Chris Bryant is trying to eventually, you know, make sure that he has the service time so that he can then have himself as a free agent as well. Or a guy like Miguel Cabrera, if he doesn't get service time, the Tigers are still paying him when he's 41.
Right, yeah. So the teams that have some of those expiring contracts, you know, I think they really wanted this, you know, like a Burrow case, a Pujols case, some of the San Francisco Giants. But in the star players, it's like, well, you miss out at, Cleveland Indians fans miss out a year now on Lindor, which we only have 1 year left. You know, like you said, a Bryant, a guy like a Christian Yelich, he's not making much money this year. Now all of a sudden, you know, he'll really start to make money here in the next couple of years. So, you know, big blow to the Brewers.
I'll get to the season in a moment. I want to get to one other part. The NFL and its players just ratified a collective bargaining agreement. Of course, they did this with the TV contract being next. The vote was relatively close. What about Major League Baseball, which has now gone since the beginning of 1995 with, quote, labor peace? Where are they on a CBA with all of this going around?
Well, I mean, at least the negotiations have been very smooth so far on this, you know, on what's going to happen here with the coronavirus, you know, when you start up games, that sort of thing, you know, what the schedule would look like. So, but they haven't really talked about the CBA. But it's a good sign that things were so, you know, worked out so well during this, you know, no big flare-ups. Got to do it. The trouble with the CBA now is nobody's going to know what the landscape looks like. Owners, if there's no season, all of a sudden an industry, you know, that generated $10.7 billion last year, all of a sudden, you know, generate zero. So will the owners have that same appetite to spend free agent money and stuff, if it, you know, to take a big bath in 2020?
The roster was supposed to be expanded to 26. What could it look like in the opening month of the season as they get into this?
I think we're looking at maybe 30. Minimum 28, 29, just because they want to start up fast. They're running out of time, so you're not going to give these guys a month to get ready for this season. Maybe 2-3 weeks max, you know, only leave because the pitchers, and go from there. So since the pitchers won't be ready, you know, stands the reason where, you know, they give teams extra, you know, 2, 3, 4 pitchers that start off with that first month.
It's interesting because I talked with Larry Anderson, who does the Phillies broadcast, and Larry told me, so the first question I asked him was that when you were with the Mariners, you went through the 1981 strike, and they were out for weeks. I said, what was it like getting back? And he said it actually was, for them, easier getting back than some people realized because they were already in great shape. Now, I realize you have to have pitchers stretched out, but is that some of the prevailing thought in Major League Baseball? These guys already come into spring training in great shape?
Well, yeah, at least the pitchers had, you know, and all these guys had 3/4 of a spring training. Let's go back, you know, a little less time, 95 strike. They came back, and they were playing games within 3.5 weeks. Yeah. And these guys had been out since August 11th of the previous year.
Right.
And so only took them 3.5 weeks. So stands to reason, you know, take these guys, you know, less time. Like I said, I mean, hitters can get ready a matter of, probably 4 or 5 days. They're probably still, you know, working on the cages and things like that. Baseball, and they don't want, there's no time for exhibition games and stuff like that. They got to start playing. So I don't think they'll even have spring training in Florida, Arizona. I think they'll just go straight, work out in their own home cities and get started.
Are there different contingencies that have to be discussed about places where there's epicenters in this country as opposed to places where it's not?
Yeah, so far they haven't. I mean, they probably have to do a neutral site. I don't know. I don't think they've talked about that yet. But you're right. I mean, if there's places like California or, you know, Seattle, New York City, you know, if they're saying, hey, stay away, I think what baseball will do is still play games but with no fans. I think it's very possible we'll see games without fans for, you know, first few weeks, if not a month. For that reason, at least then players will get paid, the TV money comes in, no revenue from fans or anything like that. At least the TV money is a big thing.
And that's the part about the fans. Major League Baseball, and I hope I'm right about this, I believe Major League Baseball gets 30% of its revenue from people in seats. They're going to take a hit no matter what, but what kind of additional hit is that there if they're playing games for, say, a month without fans in seats?
It depends when it is. I mean, like right now, you know, April and September are the worst months for baseball.
That's true.
So it's different than, you know, with no fans in June or July when you have your big crowds. It also depends. I mean, a team like the Milwaukee Brewers, they rely big time on those fans because they, you know, draw about 3 million fans and they don't have a big local TV money. You know, whereas a team like the Chicago White Sox, is, you know, you're not drawing great fans, either the Tampa Bay Rays or Oakland A's, where I think it's a very minimal hit. You know, the A's certainly aren't relying on their fans or the Rays or the White Sox.
Good point. All right, what about the number of doubleheaders? Some have talked about two doubleheaders a week. What do you think is reasonable in that area?
I see maybe a doubleheader every other week.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you can't have two in a week. I mean, you know, you're not going to have a 40-man roster. You just can't do that. I mean,
right.
You know, with these guys not being in shape, I mean, the pitchers not being ready, you know, you can't hurt them. You're going to run out of pitchers. So, yeah, I think they'll schedule some in there, but not that many. There really won't be.
And the people you've talked with, Bob, what is idealistically the best case scenario? How many games could they possibly play? And then, you know, what would be a floor?
Well, I think the best case scenario is, you know, June 1st. You know, that way,
right?
You know, you got 4 months, say roughly 30 games a month. That's a that's a little high, but that's 120 games. Then you add on regular season games in October. You can make up, you know, 25 to 30 games there. You know, they're talking about, you know, over 140 game schedule. That's ideal. I think, you know, they'd really like to start really no later than July 1st or July 4th weekend, at least get the July 4th weekend crowds and things like that. But I would think a minimum would have to be 100 games. And then they will factor in playing games in October and in the postseason in November. So, you know, I think they'll push it back as far as they can. But there's no, you know, if everything's still shut down by July 1st,
right,
then I think they got to look at realistically, like, okay, this isn't going to happen.
It also means that realistically the country's in bigger trouble, too. That's what that would probably mean. 144, I mean, I think I kind of sense that's the direction you're going. That seems to have always been a magic minimum number. I know that most minor leagues play 144 games along the way. So that would probably be the top out, and 100 would be the minimum number.
Yeah, I would think they don't want to play a season under 100. I can't see them playing 81. I'm not seeing it's impossible. But I do believe also that you play, say 100 games or so, that we'll have expanded postseason. We'll have extra wild card teams and stuff like that just to, you know, make up for it. Because, you know, the beauty about baseball is you don't have, there's no flukes. You got to, pay your way all the way through to make the playoffs. And now, you know, we're going to see some flukes. I mean, I think the Pittsburgh Pirates were only like a half a game out of a playoff berth at the All-Star game last year.
Right.
You know, then completely fell apart. But, you know, so we're going to have some flukes make the playoffs if there is a season.
What about also the possibility of having this, having a World Series played deep into November, not just like skirting into November like 2001, but going deep into November?
I think it's very possible. I'm sure they don't want to play as late as, you know, as Thanksgiving. They really don't. But, you know, if they have to, they have to. Even if they, a cold weather site. You know, the one thing, too, they got to make sure, you don't want to affect the 2021 season.
That's true.
It's like, okay, when these guys going so deep that, you know, now these guys aren't ready. I think we get rid of the All-Star game. They can play during those 4 days. So I would say maybe up to, you know, around Thanksgiving. And then I think people lose their appetite for it. And I think baseball's concern, too, is like, well, they're playing in November. Hey, now you're going up against, you know, the NFL, college football. You know, the other sports are starting up. It's like it might be a rude awakening how many people really like baseball. You know, the TV ratings, they may say, you know what, we don't really care about that. We're focused on our football.
What's this been like for you?
Yeah, just reminds me a little bit like the work stoppage in 95. It's almost like, you know, there's no end in sight. Before, it's like, you know, just the negotiations were painfully slow in baseball. And this is you're, you know, watching the, coronavirus updates, you know, Twitter, the news and stuff like that. Every time someone comes on, you know, that is president, governor, center, you're kind of paying attention because baseball is going to follow that lead.
Right.
It's like nothing's going to happen until they say it's okay to come out. And so right now they said, okay, no gatherings, you know, up until May 10th. You know, I think everybody believes that it's going to be extended here at some point.
All right, and one last question that deals with, we already know the Astros thing is done because Rob Manfred said that yesterday, it's done. The Red Sox investigation is done, and there's been a little bit that's trickled out about that. Any idea when we'll find out the full report on that, and any idea what might be in it?
Well, I think the report will come out, you know, probably close to the time when baseball starts up, you know, their spring training, second spring training. Do that. It just, you know, I don't think you can do it now. It's just too insensitive. Right. I also believe there's not much there. They took a long time. I don't think they weren't getting nearly the same cooperation as the Astros are giving. And the reason is there was no, you know, whistleblower. They didn't have a Mike Fiers on the Red Sox saying we did this and we did that. So I don't think they have enough on them. I also believe that, you know, we'll see what happens with Alex Cora. You know, if they don't name him in the report, or if it's very little, talking to baseball people, they wouldn't be surprised at all to see Alex Cora managing the Red Sox in 2021. It's like, okay, let's bring this guy back.
Because I believe Ron Renicki has been named the interim manager. I believe he has that title, correct?
Yeah, and that's only because, say, if Cora's in the report along with Renicki, it's like, okay, that'd be a little embarrassing.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason he's interim. If he's not in the report at all, you know, then I think, you know, they'll take that interim title off, you know, within hours after the release.
Bob, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Always appreciate you very much. And the audience really thinks you're terrific. So thanks so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment. More of James Franklin in the final half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Pundit was the latest to postpone from the spring to the summer, going from May 24th to August 23rd. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, is there going to be an Indy 500 on August 23rd? Is there going to be NBA playoffs in August? Could there be Stanley Cup playoffs in August?
Yeah, I think August, what's normally, Steve, back end of baseball, when things start to rev up, pennant races start, football starts, it's just going to be a mass of everything.
And guess whose favorite month of the year, sports-wise, is August?
Yes, I'm aware.
Right now, sitting in a very comfortable chair, I might add, with an ear-to-ear smile.
But I agree.
I'm surprised I'm not getting a text right now about August.
I haven't gotten anything yet. I was going to say, I do agree, Steve, with Ovechkin and Crosby, that the NHL should just start the playoffs as soon as they get going again, just for time purposes, because I don't think if any NHL fan or anybody involved with the NHL wants to go deep into the summer. And not only that, too, it's not going to be good for those playing services either, because, yeah, they keep the arenas cold as best as they can, but you'll still be dealing with some really bad ice surfaces because of the temperatures outside the arena.
Right.
So, and you only have, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks? No, I'm sorry, about a month or so left of the season. I think they're okay just to start the playoffs right away, too. That's what I would do. NBA, same thing, honestly.
They were deep enough into the season.
Absolutely.
Let me just look and see how deep they actually were into the...
I think there was about less than a month and a half left.
10 or 15 games, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'll look that up for you. I'll mention this before we get James, how deep they actually were into the respective seasons. Because they each play an 82-game schedule. I mean, if if they're up over 65 games apiece, you know what?
Let's get it going. Totally agree.
Yeah. Why not? All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And that outstanding service department at Sunbury Motors is open to serve you. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the outstanding service department at Sunbury Motors is absolutely open, and they will take care of your needs, and they'll do it professionally, to the point, and financially on the mark. That is Sunbury Motors, great service department. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The NBA was about in the range of 65 games played when the season ended. They still had 17 to go. The NHL, which is always ahead of the NBA games-wise, was at 70 games right in that neighborhood, so they had a dozen to go. So I would start with the playoffs.
Totally agree. There we go.
Why not? I think it would get people engaged right away. Instead of, you know, just, oh, okay, great. You know, another, oh, great. Florida's playing who? Okay. That start with a playoff. Now, if you want to expand the playoff, you could. If you wanted to expand to 20, okay. If you thought that was the right way to go. But I'd start with the playoffs, since they're that deep into their respective seasons. All right, James Franklin yesterday talked with the media about Penn State football. Look, there are a lot of challenges in this, and one of them is this. I want to point this out before we get to James. Do not make the assumption that everybody is in the same boat. These players are a cross-section like anybody else. They are in different socioeconomic backgrounds. Don't assume they all have workout rooms at home. Many of them, believe it or not, are actually would have been better off in terms of working out. In terms of working out, they would have been better off here. So there are different challenges here. And yesterday, James talked about that and more.
You talked a lot about trying to cultivate the most a competitive environment in college football. How does that sustain when everybody's scattered across the country? And what can guys do right now to put themselves in a good spot for position battles before they get back to campus?
Well, I think the biggest thing, the way I look at it is, you know, we try to compete in everything we do. And right now, we're in a challenging situation. And the reality is the most successful people and the most successful organizations and the most successful teams are going to handle this challenge the best and come out of it the best. Are we going to be where we were before? No, but nobody else is as well. So how are we handling this situation? The self-determination and drive to make sure we're doing everything we're supposed to do academically. Same thing, whether it's body weight workouts on your own. Again, we're still competing with all the other top programs in the country, and the best programs and the best individuals are going to handle, you know, this adversity the best. And I would even, you know, like to try to even flip it in some ways and say, if handled the right way, we have an opportunity to learn from this, to grow from this, to learn some things about ourselves individually, to learn some things about ourselves as program. Again, embracing the technology, all these different things that we have to do, and hopefully come out of this thing stronger and use this as an opportunity to learn and grow as a program.
Mike Gross, Lancaster Newspapers. James. How are you?
Good, Mike. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. Thanks for doing this. With a new offensive coordinator, are you having to install anything that the guys have literally never heard of before or seen before? And in that sense, is that any sort of a particular challenge to not have spring ball with Kirk?
Yeah, so yeah, the interesting thing is we could give our playbook right now to Minnesota and it does not look like Minnesota's playbook. And there's things that don't look like Penn State's playbook because really we have kind of merged it all, you know. So there's probably only one new scheme that we haven't done before. There's some tweaks to things that we have done, but there's probably only one specific scheme that we're going to be running that's going to be a major part of our offense that we haven't run in the past. But there's also things that we're running that Kirk didn't run at Minnesota based on the blend. So it's let's not call something the way we've always called it, because that's how you always called it at Minnesota. That's how we always called it at Penn State. Let's do what's the best thing for the system. Because I think that's an important thing that I learned, is all these things are great ideas, but you have to have a system and it has to fit together and they have to be complementary pieces, if that makes sense. You know, I remember being an offensive coordinator, and you'd go out and hire different coaches and they'd all come in with great ideas, but those ideas have got to fit the scheme and they got to be complementary pieces. So that's what we're doing. So yeah, there's new stuff for our players, but there's also new stuff for Kirk. So we're kind of all working through it together to put together the best offense we can for Penn State. It's not Minnesota. It's not Penn State. It's a merge like we've talked about in the past.
Peter Terpstra, WTHA.
Hey, Coach, can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
Hello. Coach, this is kind of a philosophical question. What do you think people can learn from this whole situation, whether it be like disruption of their routine, maybe spending more time with the family, doing things differently? And how do you think, you know, young people might view this whole thing going forward?
Well, I think probably early on, specifically young people, probably a lot of people weren't taking this serious enough. I'm not a politician, but there's part of me that would just love to lock the whole country down, all of it. Because I think the sooner we do that, the quicker we can come out of this thing. But I think for all of us, whether it's young people or whether it's middle aged or whether it's the elderly, you know, this has kind of been a wake up call for all of us of how fragile it all is and how careful we have to be. And again, I think the positives that can come out of this thing is people being forced outside of their comfort zone and having to operate in a different way that they're used to operating. I'm not a sit in front of the computer for 9 hours a day, but that's basically what I've been doing. Whether it's been, you know, we typically have a conference call every single day with the AD. I have a separate conference call with my sports supervisor and Scott Sidwell. We'll have team meetings. We're obviously FaceTiming recruits. We're on the tablets going through the installs and the video. So I'm not typically a sit in front of the computer for 9 hours straight type of guy, but that's how it's been. So I think it's just, like I mentioned before, I think it's forcing a lot of people out of their normal comfort zone. And again, if it's approached the right way, then I think that we can learn from this and we can grow from this. One of the quotes that we used in our first team meeting with our players that I love, it's an Andy Grove quote, and the quote says, "Bad companies are destroyed by crisis. Good companies survive them. Great companies are improved by them." And obviously, we want to be in that category. So it's at a fine line. You know, we want to be sensitive to what's going on in our country, but we also have a responsibility to make sure we're doing everything we possibly can to make sure our guys are still getting a great education, even though that may be online. That they're still taking care of their bodies because we put so much hard work in that they don't want to lose that. And then also, obviously, you know, when it comes to football specific activities and things like that, we got to come out of this and be able to hit the ground running.
Josh Josh Moyer, Center Daily Times.
Hey, James. Overall, I just wanted to ask, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I just wanted to ask you how your staff members and players, you know, how they've been so far through this. And has anyone there, you know, tested positive for the coronavirus?
Yeah, Josh, as you can imagine, you know, I'm not going to answer, you know, questions when it comes to, you know, people's specific health. I don't even know if that's legal to do that. You know, yeah, it's all over the map. When you got as many different people that we do in our organization and as many different backgrounds, this is challenging. This is challenging from a health perspective. This is challenging from a financial perspective. People are being, you know, hit from, you know, so many different angles and perspective. We had players that have gone home, you know, and their families have, you know, taken their bedrooms and turned them into different things, and they're sleeping on couches. There's so many different dynamics that have gone into this, and we want to be sensitive to all of them. You know, so yeah, it's all over the map. We got some guys that are in State College on campus. We got some guys that are in State College in their own apartments. The great majority of our team is at home with families. But again, you know, some guys have challenging situations there as well. So we're trying to be aware of all these different situations that we can and be sensitive to them and be as supportive as we possibly can within the NCAA rules.
Greg Pickle, Penn Live.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good, Greg. How are you, buddy?
I'm well, thanks. Hey, I'm just curious about, from a recruiting perspective, has it changed much for you guys since you can still do a lot of what you just did in February with the dead period? And are you looking into doing anything potentially with virtual junior days or things like that?
Yeah, it's challenging. I think this has been more challenging for the Northeast schools than it is for most of the other schools in the country, because if you look at it, you know, for me, one of the big parts about the NCAA is to try to level the playing field as much as you possibly can. Some schools have gotten done spring ball. Some people have gotten done half of spring ball. They've had junior days. For us, the way the calendar fell, you know, one of the things that was really challenging is our players were home on spring break when this hit. So I wasn't even able to have a team meeting. A lot of our players didn't have their books with them. They weren't able to come back to campus. It's challenging. We weren't able to get recruits on campus like we normally are. Spring ball is a huge recruiting time for us, for them to come up, watch practice, interact with the coaches, all those types of things. So I think the Northeast schools, that spring ball is a little bit later. You know, it's more challenging. You know, I think it's one of the reasons why I think the Big Ten was so aggressive in the new recruiting rules that went into place last year with doing official visits in the spring and things like that, that we could get guys on campus, you know, when the weather was attractive and things like that. So it's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. Again, embracing the technology is the best thing we can do. FaceTimes are a big part of that. Virtual tours is something that we're going to have to do. We haven't done a whole lot of that. A lot of people have that built on their website. We haven't done that typically in the past, because, you know, to be honest with you, you know, I think we had a great building and I don't necessarily want everybody to know what we have in our buildings. I know that's what we do. We steal ideas from other people that have, you know, put things in their building and things like that. So, now, you know, obviously we're in a different scenario and we have to embrace that and we're going to have to use it. So, you know, but I think FaceTimes is probably as big as anything, with the recruits right now and finding ways to interact with them and they see your face. I actually think there's a part of this, you know, this conference that we're having right now, this conference call with everybody, even seeing your guys' faces, it kind of gets us back into our normal routine. I think it's the same thing with our players. It's one thing to call a player. It's another thing to be able to get on Whoop or FaceTime and be able to interact and smile and see each other. So, you know, I think there's value in all these things, and we're just trying to embrace them as much as we possibly can to close ground on some of the schools that have, you know, got further into spring ball and further into junior days and things like that.
Audrey Snyder, The Athletic.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good, Audrey. How are you?
Good. Just waiting for the new season of Ozark to drop.
Yeah, I love Ozark. Yeah. When is that coming back on?
Friday.
Good. You know, me and Fumi have been watching late at night. We've been watching Mindhunter. Have you ever watched that show?
No, but I was sucked into Tiger King, and that's a wild ride.
Yeah, I haven't checked that one out, but we are like it's funny. Like even the Netflix thing that we put out, like I don't watch any of this stuff. I did watch Ozark, so it was more of my wife's list than it was mine. But yeah, I like Ozark.
Yeah. No, likewise.
Mindhunter. Check out Mindhunter.
Mindhunter? I think I'll have enough time to do it.
Ben Jones is giving us a thumbs up.
James, I'm just wondering, though, along with recruiting, at this point, do you think that, you know, a December signing period would even be realistic? Have there been conversations about maybe doing away with that this year, given everything that's going on?
Yeah, there's so many different scenarios out there and so many different proposals based on conferences, you know, based on the NCAA. There's so many different proposals out there. I think it's hard to say anything right now when we don't know when this is going to end. But I think all options are on the table right now. You know, what I want to make sure that we do is, before we just throw something out there and say something, that we've had enough discussion and dialogue with all the conferences, the commissioners, and I hope even, you know, even specific campuses and coaches and things like that, because it's just not that simple. Even like the discussion that we've had in extending guys' eligibility and giving people another year of eligibility, we threw that out there before we really talked it all through. People have limits on their roster sizes. How is that gonna be affected? People have already signed recruiting classes. If you do this, this is your number of recruits. There's a lot of factors that go into this. So I just think the point you brought up is a good one, but we just gotta make sure that all these things are vetted and really well thought through. Because there's always unforeseen consequences to these decisions.
Heather Dinich, ESPN.com.
So a lot of coaches have been talking about how they're sending players workouts, body strength, et cetera. Can you give me some specifics as to how you get creative with, say, an offensive lineman who doesn't have the equipment he would have on the field, or a receiver or a quarterback who doesn't have the space maybe in an apartment to try and make long throws? What are some other things that you guys are asking them to do besides push-ups, sit-ups, et cetera?
Well, I think the first thing is, the reality is you can get a lot of work done with body weight workouts. You really can. So trying to embrace that as much as we can, trying to focus on the things that we can control and not the things that we can't, and making sure our guys embrace them as much as possible. And then what we've tried to do is really go through our strength staff, reached out to every single one of our players to find out what do they have. So it's not like we could just send a workout to the whole team. It was based on individuals. You know, they may have a kettlebell or something like that in their house. What do they have? And then be able to try to build the workout around that for them. Some guys live in an area where they have the ability to get out and run on a field or something like that. Again, I think we have to be careful of how much we're leaving the house. But we've tried to look at all those things in terms of quarterbacks and receivers and throwing the ball and things like that. I don't really see where that fits with where we are as a program and where we are as a country with this virus right now. I think that needs to take the back seat, you know, for the time being. I mean, obviously some people have more space in their home or more space in their basement or more space in their backyard that they're still able to do some things. I know some of our players, I saw some of our offensive linemen working on pass sets in the front lawn and things like that. So there's some of that. And then what we've also tried to do is look at like a backpack workout. So what I mean by that is whether it's taking a duffel bag or whether it's taking a backpack and loading that up with sand or loading that up with rocks and being able to do basically a body weight workout with whatever that backpack or that bag is able to hold. And then once we find out what that is and if they have the ability to do that, then we can adjust the workout for that as well. So, you know, it's challenging, but you know, I think your point is a good one. It's very, very difficult based on what people have at home and what position they play.
Hey, football coach James Franklin. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dick Girardi is going to join us on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to hearing from DJ. And more guests. By the way, we're in the process, believe it or not. I don't think Matt knows this, but at least on my end, in the process of getting a hold of Stefan Wisniewski.
Sweet.
Who just signed his contract with the Steelers. And Steph will do the show. I'm sure he will. And when we do, of course, we'll have to ask him about the Eagles' Super Bowl run, which he was a critical part of. And the Chiefs' Super Bowl run, which he was a critical part of. And now he's with the Steelers. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.